Welcome, listeners, to Shooting from the Hip, the Dayton area's first and only talk radio show designed to provide a forum for discussion of all sorts of gun-related issues, ranging from concealed carry to product reviews and anything else our listeners are concerned about. I'm your host, Jeff Pedro, and just back from vacation, ready to light up the airways with some productive radio talk. Our co-host, Mark Avery, may be back here later this afternoon. Remember that the show is brought to you by SimTrainer, the Dayton area's premier indoor shooting range and firearms training facility. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine. You can call us at 293-3914, or you can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. I'd also like to welcome our listeners to call into the show at 457-1290. That's 457-1290 with your comments or questions. Make for a little bit of dialogue today. I want to devote today's show to a discussion of gun safety as a result of a couple of unfortunate, tragic, avoidable accidents that occurred in the Dayton area over the past 2 weeks, which I'm sure many of our listeners have read about, where children aged 3 and 5 in separate incidents in Vandalia and Hamilton found loaded guns in their parents' bedrooms, and they shot themselves, one in a closet, one under a bed, and they were both tragically killed. Understand that there's no intention here to point the blame for those unfortunate accidents to anyone in particular, since certainly all our listeners and our staff here and anybody else certainly feel their pain. Sometimes, however, I think that we need to let incidents like this be the catalyst for change, because it's in the public awareness at the present time, and we need to take advantage of that and really not to let the death of those wonderful children be in vain. As of this point, there's limited information since the investigations on both of those incidents are ongoing, but preliminary reports are that both children acquired the loaded firearms somewhere in the household. I want to start there by just mentioning that gun ownership carries with it some very, very, very serious responsibilities. And first and foremost of those responsibilities is preventing anyone who should not have access from gaining access to the gun. Now, when I talk about that, I want to clarify, because I think because of the recent events, some people get a little bit their views are a little bit canted, but I want to explain that that applies to anybody who should not have access to the gun, anywhere from kids to untrained adults to anybody that would be curious. And a couple things I want to mention about that is, one thing I've learned over the years raising 6 children and being associated with their friends and being a football coach and being around kids, for the most part, unfortunately, the reality is that peer pressure will supersede parental advice or adult advice much of the time. That's the sad reality. And the example I want to give there is, we've all told our kids many, many, many times the dangers associated with drinking and driving, and yet drinking and driving accidents continue to be one of, if not the most critical feature in the fatalities or the deaths among children between 15 and 18. We also talk about the prohibitions or restrictions on adolescent sex, but yet our kids continue to get themselves into situations, and again, the adults give the advice, the kids hear it, they let the peer pressure overcome their what they know is right. Same is true here with guns. We tell our kids, unfortunately, as Mark and I were discussing today, unfortunately, this last generation, mostly, I'm going to say, fueled by the anti-gun movement, we've lost the heritage of gun education in our homes, and as a result, these things are more likely to happen because of those kinds of issues. And we've got to change that. We've got to start gun education at an early age. You got to tell your kids at an early age that. You look at the Eddie Eagle basic program. You see a gun laying around, you stop, you don't touch it, you leave the area, and you go tell an adult. Pretty simple 4-step process. And you got to start that at a very early age, otherwise there's going to be problems. The other side of that, in addition to education, you've got to be responsible enough to know that that gun has to be secured when it is not on your person for personal protection, or you're not out the range shooting, or you're not taking it to the gun show to try to sell it. Whatever the case might be, it needs to be secured properly in an unloaded condition, or if you're going to keep it loaded, in a locked location where anybody who shouldn't have access can't get to it. And back to that point about anybody who shouldn't have access, another case I'm aware of, I just want to give you a general situational scenario. Four college students, four 18 to 22-year-old young men are sharing a house off campus where they're allowed to have firearms. Two of the kids are hunters, two of them are not. Well, the two that are not are curious. When the two that are gone are away from home, one of the two that are not hunters decides they want to take a look at the guns that the two that are hunters have in their bedrooms, unsecured. So they mosey into the bedroom, and they're handling the firearms. And naturally, when you don't know anything about a firearm, there's a greater chance for a problem. One of the first things they do is put their finger in the trigger. And in the one case, the kid pointed the gun up toward the ceiling and pulled the trigger. The round went off. It shot one of the paddles on the ceiling fan off, and it landed a foot away from a baby's crib in the upstairs bedroom, in the apartment upstairs. Now, that wasn't a kid. That was an 18 to 20-year-old young adult, not trained in the use of guns, certainly not trained in gun safety. And then you had another issue where the person who owned the guns did not properly secure them in the home. Now, there might have been a reasonable assumption that, well, being 18 to 22, they won't go in their room and handle the gun. But when you have people like that around, the curiosity of handling guns is a powerful motivation for them to do just that. So you gun owners out there, I want you to think about that responsibility, because it is probably the most serious responsibility that you have, short of ultimately using your gun in self-defense to protect your life or someone else's life. You got to take that responsibility very seriously. And I just want to get the message out there. And one of the things we're going to do at Sim Trainer, there's a lot of devices out there that you can acquire for a very inexpensive price. The most practical is a simple gun cable lock that are available in many of your shooting sports stores. Project Child Safe is a national organization that's working with police departments around the country to provide locks to police departments so they can distribute to members of the community free of charge. And I want to encourage anybody that needs a lock to contact your local police department to see if they have any of those available and take advantage. Now, they may be in limited supply, so please be reasonable. I imagine they'll probably restrict it to maybe one person per, but there's no reason why you can't get a gun lock. Also, many people don't even know that there's a gun lock, and it's also required by law when you buy a new gun, there's a gun lock in the container that the gun came in. Some of the people don't even know to move the foam out of the way and take a peek and see that there's a gun lock inside the case. So check that first. If you don't have one, check your local gun store. And next week, if you have a problem with that, or you have one and you don't know how to use it, stop by Sim Trainer at 2031 Dryden Road during our open hours, and one of our staff members will be more than glad to show you how to use that. And if you don't have one, we'll make arrangements to get you one, because locking your gun up is extremely important. I see Mark's joined us.
Howdy.
Welcome. We've got a couple callers on the line. Let's go to Jim and Xenia. Jim, you with us?
Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome.
I'm a retired police officer, and I got a couple questions about the federal law permitting retired officers to carry concealed.
Go ahead, Jim.
The first question is, I was told, and I don't know if this is correct or not, that retired officers that maintain their qualifications, yearly qualifications, and have the proper ID with them can carry in all 50 states. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
Okay. And the second business, I'm sorry, the second question I have is, some local businesses, many around this area, that have the no firearms on premises sign on their doors, under the federal law, can we as retired officers still carry into that business?
Well, Jim, I'm going to tell you right now, that's the ambiguous area that unfortunately has not been decided. I just consulted two attorneys yesterday about that very issue, because Mark mentioned you'd called in, and I also received your email, and I did some research on that, and no one really knows the answer. I was at a conference about 4 months ago where a representative, believe it or not, from the U.S. Attorney General's office was there, and the very question came up. And the Attorney General could not give a straight answer. His explanation was that the federal law allows states to allow private individuals, private entities, to restrict firearms possession on their premises. And that's kind of a general sweeping restriction. That applies. But let me just give you one example that I ran into that I can just tell you on an individual basis what happened. I was out at Washington, D.C. with my family last year, and we went down to the series of Smithsonian Institutes, and, of course, they have signs posted everywhere. I walked up to the front counter. I identified myself as a police officer, showed my credentials, and they simply had me sign a book and show my police ID, and they explained to me that they wanted me to have a good time and there was no issue, and that was federal property. And there's one example where I think it's going to be established on an individual case-by-case basis until we get one of two things happens. We get an attorney general's opinion, which I think they're going to be reluctant to do, especially with the current administration, or, unfortunately, there's a test case that definitively says that that's the case. Now, the other thing we have working for us, Jim, and you've been, how many years were you a policeman?
27 and a half.
Okay, 27 and a half years. I'm coming up on 25 years. I would hope the good Lord would give whatever officers get dispatched to handle cases like this, he would give them the common sense to apply common sense discretionary decision-making to law-abiding police officers. Now, I'll go a step further and say I want that to apply to citizens also, but...
Thank you.
But we'll get down that. We'll go down that road. But I would hope law enforcement officers would be able to give individual discretion and not do anything there because the law is ambiguous. Does that help you?
It sure does.
Okay. Well, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to go to a couple more callers. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 News Talk Radio, WHIO. Within a very short period of time. Now, when I say accurate, because of the varying types of police agencies around the country, rural, small departments, sheriff's offices, small to mid to large-sized metropolitan police departments, there's a little bit of a chance that some of that data is going to either not get to its intended location or will ultimately get to its intended location in some distorted fashion. So we estimate that that data, we give a safe estimate that that's about as close as you're going to get within 10% of the reality. Now let me just give you some trends in general firearms-related deaths, and then I'm going to talk specifically about accidents. Each year in this country, there's about, on average, 14,000 total homicides. That's by all means, 14,000 on average, and that's a running total over the last several years. Handguns account for roughly, on an annual basis, about 9,000 of those total homicides. I'm talking total homicides, people killed by guns. Now, when you take that total number, you'll hear people say that there were 34,000 deaths attributed to firearms. Well, the number is closer to 32,000, but just based on the information I just told you, if 14,000 are by homicide, where do the other 16,000 to 18,000 come from? Well, I will tell you that suicide by firearm accounts for about 16,000 of those handgun deaths. Now, the other problem that we have with the data is a lot of people who talk about the problem with gun accidental deaths in particular is they will lump in all the kids age range 16 to 24, all the people age 16 to 24 who were killed via homicide with the accidental death rates. So they kind of use the statistics to present the agenda that they particularly want to promote. So you have to look at the data hard and fast and separate it and try to find ways to substantiate what you see. Now, I will tell you that the National Training Council Accident Facts is probably one of the most reliable sources out there, and we will make sure that we post these connections to the various websites on this month or this week's show page on the radio. Mark, you want to add something?
Yeah, actually, if you go to our show page at sim-trainer.com/radio, the link to the FBI Uniform Crime Reports is already there on the June 20 show notes because we talked about that once before. So if anybody wants to go out there before we get the show notes up finished for today's show, you can go to the Uniform Crime Reports page there.
And again, if you go back to that National Safety Council Accident Facts page, you'll see that for the 10-year period, 1999 to 2008, there's been a downward trend, and that the accidental deaths have been between 650 and 790, I think, on the high end. So, you know, there's a lot of data out there, but I want you to look at that data carefully. And when I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about the statistics related to people who use firearms in self-defense and give you a kind of a perspective in that regard.
Because they usually roll those numbers in when
That's
the
exactly
anti-gunners
right.
are talking about
That's
it. They
exactly
talk
right.
about people that legitimately use their firearm in self-defense, and they count those
right.
as deaths from firearm
right.
because they like to use that big, scary number.
And when we come back, we'll clarify that. We got a couple callers on the line, and we'll get to you. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO. Welcome back, listeners, to Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer. Remember, you can reach us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. You can visit us at the store at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine, or you can call us at 293-3914. I want to go to one of our callers we've had on the line for a while. We got Mike from Beaver Creek. You have a question about renewing your license. Go ahead, Mike. Are you with us?
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Yeah. My question is this. I'm moving from Greene County to Hamilton County, and since they're not adjacent counties, I was told that I would have to go through the renewal process all over again for concealed handgun license. Is that right?
Do you have is your license expiring?
No, just it'll expire in actually August of 2010.
Okay, no, you don't have to do anything except notify the current sheriff, the sheriff that issued your license, notify them of your change of address. You deal with that sheriff until your license expires.
Oh, that's great. That's terrific. Because I was under the impression I'd have to go through the training all over again.
No, that's not. I'm not sure where you got that, or if somebody told you that, they just hadn't read the book. The requirement is that you provide notice. In fact, it doesn't matter where you go in Ohio. As long as you stay as an Ohio resident, you can go to any place, and you just have to provide notice to the sheriff that issued your license anytime that you have a change in address, so that if there was something that they needed to let you know about, if for some reason it was suspended or revoked, or because there was some radical change that they needed to get in contact with you, they need to have an address that they can mail to you and be sure that it will get to you. And that's your responsibility, to provide them notice within 45 days of your moving. But you don't have to do anything else. You don't even have to get a new license. You just let them know what your new address is, and then you're done.
Okay, hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show. Let's go to Dave in Riverside. Dave, you have a question?
Yeah, I was all about gun safety. I got a three-year-old at home, and I usually keep a loaded magazine and the pistol, but I don't rack the slide. He can't do it right now. But I've been shopping biometric safes because I believe, you know, come time I have to wake up in the middle of the night, I don't want to be fiddling with a key to unlock my pistol. And these biometric safes, I've been noticing there's a lot of them under about $100, and I don't feel, I've never messed with them, I've never used them, but $100 seems kind of cheap for something like that that's going to be in between me and my pistol when I need it.
Well, Dave, just something to think about. In that situation, don't let cost be the driving force. I don't
right.
care if it's $100 or $300. You got to look at securing that pistol from that three-year-old, and I'm going to tell you, I've got five boys. And when they were 3, 5, and 7, they were able to break into a gun lock mechanism that a vendor provided me to see if the kids could get into it.
And they could.
They're very resourceful, and they could. Now, one of them went and got a screwdriver and pried it, but he was smart enough to know to go to get something, and that's why I want to tell you the biometric safes are a good option. When you talk about personal safety and security, remember the stress, the impact, the physiological, psychological, and other stressors that are going to affect you in a critical incident are also going to apply to the biometric safe. It may not be as cumbersome to open the biometric safe as it would be to open up the key lock safe, but you've got to practice with it.
If you push down on it pretty hard, you could make up for that.
Well, that's a good thing, but you got to remember to push down on it hard in the right sequence at the right time, and I'm going to tell you from experience, when you're under stress, your body does strange things. So I want to encourage you to practice with it. It's a great option. All the safes out there, whether you get a floor safe, a safe that you can mount to the shelf in a closet, a gun locker that has a lock, a closet that has a locked door, whatever mechanism it is, it's going to require that you be able to open it when you have to open it under stress, and you got to practice doing that.
Is this biometric safe that you're talking about one of these that reads your fingerprint?
Like three fingers. It's the one of the vendors at the gun show brings by.
Okay, so it's got push buttons then.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's not really a biometric safe. It has a push-button combination, and we have some of those at the range as well, and that's a pretty decent option.
It's not a code you push in. It reads your fingerprints.
Oh, it does read your fingerprint. Okay, so it, and how hard you press on that is going to affect how well it reads the fingerprint. So that's one of the things about practicing with it. You need to be able to do that at the same strength each time, because that will affect how it reads the fingerprint.
Have you guys got them down at Sim Trainer?
We don't have the biometric ones, just because there hasn't been a high demand for them. And again, the issue isn't so much the mechanism for the lock, but it's practicing getting the lock box open, whether it's a keyed lock to a doorknob of a closet, a key lock to a safe, a three-digit or a three-button push-button in sequence issue, or a biometric. The bottom line is you practice, and I want to offer to you and the rest of the listeners some very good advice. The need to keep that gun away from people who shouldn't have access to it is the most important issue here. So spend the money, take the time, do the practice, and let's continue the downward trend of unfortunate accidents occurring. And Dave, I really appreciate you calling today, because your comment and your question was right on point.
That's great. You guys have a nice evening, and you need to make your show longer.
Well, we wish we could, and maybe next year we may do that. We'll negotiate with the radio station. Let's go to Kim in Dayton. She has a question of heat and ammo inside her car. Kim, you with us?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead with your question.
Yes, some places, you know, you can't bring your weapon with you, and so I leave it in the car. And I was wondering, how does that affect the ammunition, like, let's say, on a very hot day in a locked car?
It's a good question. In the short term, likely no effect. The problem is, when people do that repeatedly over a long period of time, with the changing atmospheric conditions and weather conditions we have in southwestern Ohio here, you have a low temperature at night in the 50s, and then you have a high temperature in the day in the 90s, and you have all the condensation and humidity and everything in between. And when people drive their car, some of them take it home and they leave it wherever they keep it, inside the car, and it's subjected to those extremes, it gets to be a problem. The heat itself, for short term, isn't a problem except for this factor. When you go to get that gun, if it's been there for a long time, it's going to be extremely hot like any other metal object. That's why I want to encourage you to look into, there's one particular safe out there, it's a company called Securit. We sell them at Sim Trainer. A lot of other places have it. It's a good device because it will help insulate the gun from that extreme heat, not totally eliminate, but it will insulate the gun to the extent that it won't be as hot if you need to access it. Something you want to add to that, Mark?
Yeah, I have one of those as well, and not being a police officer, there's a few more places that I go that I can't take a firearm. And so I do have my gun in the safe from time to time, and if you have to leave it in there, the Securit safe has foam on top and bottom, which does two things. It secures the firearm in the safe so it won't slip around, but it also does provide a little bit of insulation. Plus, you can slide it under the seat so it's not in the direct sun.
It brings up another topic about just generally storing the gun. And I had a good friend who came to concealed carry class a few months back, and he said, I got a gun, and I've had it for a long time. Why don't you look at it for me? And he brought it out, and I was amazed at what I saw. It had condensation-generated beginnings of rust all over the outside. When we took the magazine out, he had three different kinds of ammo in it, and two of them had condensation rust that was built up in the... And I said, well, how'd this happen? He goes, well, I leave it in my car all the time. And it was subjected to those extreme atmospheric conditions over time, and it, just like any other metal object, it's going to be subject to degradation. So I want to encourage you to go through the proper means of storing the gun properly in between times that you take it from point A to point B. If it means taking it out of the car every night, bringing it into the house, finding a safe location, unloading the gun, checking it, double checking it, triple checking it, and storing it, and then reversing that process the next day, please do it.
I do that. Yeah.
Good.
I bring it in with me at night. Now, my other question is, what about the ammunition that I actually have here that's in the house? I've had it since I've had my concealed carry license, and I just now renewed it like 2 months ago.
Okay.
So should I make sure that I spend all that up and then buy new. How often should I do that?
I say the general rule with us, we say replace your personal protection ammo every year. However, from personal experience again, I've had ammo that has been fine for up to 20 years. And the key factor there, again, is not subjecting it to extremes in fluctuation in temperature and humidity.
The year applies to the ammo that you have in your gun and in the magazines that you carry with you, as opposed to the ammo that's stored in a temperature-controlled environment. If you have it in a place in your house that's in your normal living area, as opposed to in the garage or in a damp basement or in the attic someplace, that ammo will last for a long, long time. The military stores ammo in bunkers, and the ammo that you pull out after 20 or 30 years is still fine. So the personal protection ammo that you've got in the box that you're not carrying with you all the time, that doesn't, it gets subjected to being in the car and stored there for some period of time, that'll be fine. It's the ammo that you have on your person that's going to be a problem. That you really should change out about once a year or so. We're going to take a break now. You're going to when we come back, we'll take more calls. Give us a call at 457-1290. You're with Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
Welcome back, listeners, to Shooting from the Hip. Brought to you by SimTrainer. Remember, you can reach us on www.sim-trainer.com if you want to see what we have going on at the range or get some additional questions answered. I just want to make clarification about a couple of statistics that I presented earlier. I want the listeners just to remember, when you hear data by pro or anti-gun authorities, I want you to just think that on average in the country, about 16,000 total homicides, of which about 9,000 to 10,000 annually are attributed to handguns, about 32,000 total suicides, of which about 50% or 16,000 are attributed to handguns. And then when they talk about, a lot of times, accidental gun deaths, only about 700 to 800 a year. Okay, so just so you get in general perspective some of that information, that'll help you kind of understand it, because people want to throw all kinds of numbers at you. And if you have questions, be sure to send them to us. But I just felt it was necessary because there's all kind of data out there. And the other thing I just want to mention, I want to run down the most common causes of unintentional deaths in the home or in or around the home. Just give you an idea, in order, in rank order of most serious to or most frequent to least frequent: poisoning, about 20,000 a year; falls, about 11,000 a year; fires or burns, 2,500; drowning, 1,100; drowning in swimming pools; and then firearms, anywhere from 700 to 800. So that's just a shortened list of the overall list, but you can see when you look at the total number, it's tragic. Don't get me wrong. It's tragic if we have one, if we have two, if we have five. It's tragic with 760, but we have to put things in perspective and stop letting them just kind of overrun us. Let me go to a caller. We have Dan from Union. He has a question about shotgun license. Dan, you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
I've never owned a gun before. My dad got me a shotgun. I live out in Union Township, kind of in the country, and I was wondering if you had to get a license for that.
No, you don't. What I'd recommend, depending what you're going to use it for, if you're going to go use it hunting, I recommend that you go take a hunter safety class. Matter of fact, to get your hunting license, you're going to have that hunter safety class offered free by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. You can just go to odnr.com or odnr.org, and they'll be able to tell you a lot of different places that have that course offered.
The other thing is that you need to get some training on how to actually shoot the gun. And that's not included in the hunter safety class. That's a non-firearms class. But there are several places around that have shotgun. We were down last week at the shotgun trap shoot down at the Middletown Club, the Sportsman's Club. And they'd have a great training program down there. There are other places around. So you want to be sure you get some good training to go with it. Okay, let's let's go on to Cindy. You've got to call in to us from Springfield. You have a question for us that's Shooting from the Hip?
Yeah, I sure do. I have some of that old ammunition that you were talking about earlier, and I was wondering where I take it to safely dispose of it.
Oh. The first option, I want you to contact your local police department, because they have arrangements with a number of local entities, both local, state, and federal, to arrange for the actual destruction of that ammo. However, when you talk about older ammo, is some of this looking damaged and corroded and that sort of condition,
right,
or is it just ammo?
Right, it was stored in an attic.
Yeah.
I heard that part.
Yeah, I'd suggest that you get a hold of your local police department first and see where they direct you, because many of them are responsible for doing that, and they have mechanisms in place to take care of that.
Okay.
Let's go to Maurice in Indiana. Tri-state area, Indiana. He has a question about ammo. Maurice, are you with us?
Yes.
Welcome to Shooting from the Hip.
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
Ammunition.
Go ahead.
What are you allowed to own, be it pre or post band? Everything from 7.62 by 39 PS ball, which is a mild steel core, all the way up to 7.62 by 54R, which is a harder, depending on whether it's light ball or heavy ball.
Yeah, there are some states that have particular requirements and restrictions on type of ammo. For example, some of the states.
But what if you've owned this pre?
There's no federal ban, so it would depend on
anything from armor-piercing 9mm Czechoslovakian to Russian heavy ball.
Well, again, armor-piercing, you're going to have to look at each individual ammunition class individually based on the jurisdiction you live in, and then check to see if there are any other restrictions that will apply.
Okay, what if I move to Ohio, Kettering? Right, and I have this surplus of ammunition, which was bought years ago, but it's in pristine condition.
Right. No municipal ordinance, no state law per se, and it would only matter of whether or not there was a federal provision against some of that other ammo you're talking about, and some of the military classified ammo.
Provision.
I'm sorry.
M61 AP, Israeli M61 AP, which is a 308 AP.
Right.
You can go to the ATF website, and it has a list of all of the different types of...
I've been there, and it's very ambiguous,
The
language.
Well, I think the easiest thing for you to do, Maurice, just shoot up some of that old ammo when you're out on the range, and then buy some current available ammo and replace it with it, and you don't have a problem.
Ammo. Why shoot it up if it's...
Well, then the only other option is to try to go to the definitive source about the particular ammo. We'll look into that for you. If you just watch, if we get some information or the answer, we'll be more than glad to post it on the website.
If you have some specific details about particular rounds that you're interested in, email us at radio@sim-trainer.com, and we'll do some research for you and find out what the answer is on those particular ones. Let's go to Dale in Gettysburg. You have a question for us?
Yes, I do. I'm a 51-year-old law-abiding citizen. I had a minor drug conviction when I was 20, possession of marijuana, and I wanted to know if that blocks me from being able to get a concealed carry permit.
Dale, right now it does, unfortunately. 20 years ago or however long it was, that was unfortunate, but it does. You'll have to get a hold of an attorney, see if they can get it expunged from your record. But absent that, that's the answer.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
We've had a lively bunch of calls at the end of the hour here, and we want to thank everybody for joining the show. We're just about done. Jeff, go ahead.
I just want to remind everybody, think safety.
Absolutely.
It's your responsibility. Take those precautions, and let's get things back where they need to be. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 News Talk Radio, WHIO.